You're listening to the Realized Empath Podcast, where we get real about loving and stumbling through our sensitive lives, with your host and holistic counselor, Kristen Schwartz, who helps redefine what's possible for an empath who embraces a path of self-healing.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Realized Empath Podcast. I am so glad you're here, and I am delighted to have Dr. Anna Kress as a guest on today's podcast. Her work and her words inspire me, and she was one of the first souls that I trusted to read my manuscript, The Healed Empath. So let me give you a little background about Dr. Kress. She is a clinical psychologist with almost 20 years of experience providing psychotherapy. She completed her training as a postdoctoral fellow at Princeton University, is in private practice in Princeton, New Jersey. Dr. Kress integrates trauma-informed psychotherapy with mindful self-compassion. She's been a practicing meditator for 30 years and has an interest in the psychology of spirituality. Her research has focused on spirituality among women who are experiencing infertility. In addition, Dr. Kress leads educational and experimental workshops on emotional health and manifesting goals. Her work has been quoted and featured in various media, including Cosmopolitan, Success, Girl Boss, Shape, Teen, Vogue, Yoga Journal, Parents, and Women's Health. Today, we are going to dive into the topic of trauma and how it manifests in the lives of a highly sensitive person. Welcome, Dr. Kress. How are you today?
Hi, Kristen. I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so honored to have read your amazing book, and I can't wait for it to be birthed into the world because I think it's going to help so many empaths. So thank you so much for letting me read that ahead of time.
Absolutely. It's an honor to have you here. So we have a big topic to discuss today, and I talk a lot about trauma over on Instagram. I believe that highly sensitive people can be more susceptible to trauma if they're not aware of their sensitivity or care for themselves as sensitive people because of our highly attuned senses. I would love if you could start out the podcast defining trauma for us and then share your view on the empath and highly sensitive person, how they may have an increased risk of trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're talking about trauma in a very, with a very broad definition, it's an extreme form of stress that overwhelms our ability to cope. And so it's when we're exposed to a potentially traumatic event, like let's say a car crash or, something happening in the family, abuse, divorce, or a pandemic, right. A potentially traumatic event. And we're affected by that event long after it's over. So, we might have experienced a lot of intense emotions, like during a car accident, for example, but it's what's happening inside of us in an ongoing way, especially in our bodies, that really, it's the symptoms that really defines trauma. So it's more about what is happening inside of us in response to an event. And so with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, we can have symptoms like flashbacks where we feel as though it's happening, intrusive thoughts, nightmares, being very reactive. There's also something called complex trauma, and your listeners are probably more familiar with this, but that's basically also referred to as CPTSD. And rather than being based on one incident, such as in PTSD, complex trauma is being exposed to long-term, ongoing, repeated trauma. So, for example, if you grew up in a household where you had an abusive or neglectful parent, or a parent with mental illness, or something like that, and that does vary. It could be divorce. It could be bullies at school. It could be abuse. So the symptoms of complex trauma look a little different. It's a lot of emotion dysregulation, mm-hmm. Negative self-view, difficulty with relationships, dissociation. So the symptoms are a little bit different, but again, it's about what's happening inside of us, how dysregulated our nervous system continues to be. And so I love that you talk about how empaths are more at risk for developing trauma because, like you said, we do have more sensitive nervous systems. Mm-hmm. And often, empaths don't know that they're empaths. There's more information about it today, but when you're a child or a teenager, you certainly aren't exposed to that unless maybe your parents have somehow gotten that information and given it to you. And so, being exposed to a lot of sensory overload for a long time and, you know, absorbing a lot of information without protecting ourselves and releasing those emotions that we pick up from other people. So I love that you talk about how empaths are more at risk for developing trauma, because I do agree. There are a couple of factors that do make empaths more susceptible. So obviously the first one is the heightened sensitivity, you know, the nervous system that is, you know, more sensitive than other people's nervous systems. So if you don't know you're an empath, which most people don't know until they're an adult and somehow, you know, they do come across the term, you might not be engaging in self-care practices. You might not be, you know, learning how to release emotions that you pick up or protect yourself with boundaries or in various ways. And so that can be overwhelming, right? Because it's like a bridge. If we put, you know, a lot of weight on it, eventually it's going to collapse. But on a regular day, there can be lots of cars going over that bridge and it's fine and it's very strong. But if there is such an overload, that can be very taxing. And so that does make that does make it more difficult for empaths, right. I think. Another factor is that there's an environmental mismatch sometimes. So it can be, you know, that you have a caregiver who's really trying hard, but maybe they don't know what a sensitive baby needs, right? Because if you're coming into the world as a sensitive person and your nervous system is heightened, you know, and you're caregiver is trying to, you know, force eye contact, for example, or not give you some breaks, or, you know, recognize maybe you love swaddling, maybe you hate swaddling, you know, for example, and there's a mismatch between your needs and what they can provide, that can actually be, you know, really dysregulating for our nervous system and on an ongoing basis. And also, you know, not just in the home, but also in school, there can be a mismatch, right?
Right.
So in various situations, an empath can feel misunderstood, not have their needs met, or be abused by someone who's trying to, you know, quote unquote, toughen them up because they see sensitivity as a weakness.
Right.
So there can be shaming, there can be bullying. So, you know, the environment is a huge factor. Another issue that I've seen come up and certainly in my own life is that I think when you are very perceptive and intuitive and, you're picking up information, you're also picking up really heavy stuff sometimes. And so you can get secondary trauma.
Right.
From other people, right? So when you're sensing that other people have, you know, traumatic symptoms, or they, you sense that something is going on, but you can't quite put your finger on it, especially as a child. I know when I was a teenager, I would go into a friend's home and there was just this heavy energy, and you'd pick up on things like, ooh, is there like, maybe there's some abuse going on here, or mental illness or substance abuse. Something's happening here. I can sense it. But I can't really verify it,
right?
So there is this disconnect because people don't talk about these things necessarily.
Yeah.
And so you sort of question yourself. And I think, you know, what happened for me was that years later it would get confirmed. But I think what's unfortunate is when you're picking up on stuff and you can't do anything about it, you're helpless,
right?
As especially when you're younger, that can cause secondary trauma where you're like carrying and shouldering this sort of information that you can't really do anything about.
Right. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
You touched on so many important points. I get so many comments and DMs from people that, you know, they're unsure whether their intuitive nature is a blessing or a curse. And you touched on so many great points of how and why we can struggle as highly sensitive people. And I understand when you were saying like walking into a friend's home when you're younger, I remember being younger and just picking up on so much, and but also noticing that, you know, almost like saying, hey, are you guys getting this? Like, and looking around, looking for confirmation that I wasn't the only one that was sensing. And over time, the more I realized that, whoa, you know, most of my friends or even family were not picking up on what I was picking up with, it started to make me feel very isolated and like, oh, there must be something wrong with me. This, maybe I'm not picking up on this and it's just in my head. And so that kind of started the route of self-doubt and really questioning myself. And then, you know, the breakdown of self-trust, which is huge. But I love how you say that there's, you know, there's different factors. There's, of course, trauma is really about, and this is one question I wanted to ask you, is, you know, we know that trauma is what it lives in our body. So it's how our body, our nervous nervous systems respond to, right, that past event. I have a lot of people reach out and they say, well, what if I don't know my trauma? Like, I don't know the, remember the details of it, but they do have those bodily responses, that nervous system activation. And I'm interested to hear your take. My take is I don't think that the actual details matter as much as learning to soothe our bodies through those moments of being activated and triggered. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, you're really touching on something important, which is that, you know, as Bessel van der Kolk would say, our body keeps the score.
Right.
So our body remembers, even if we don't have a conscious memory of what happened. And so it's less, I don't want to say it's not important, because I think it depends on the individual and how, you know, they want, if they want to process the memory. But working with the body is a way to process emotions and traumatic emotions. That's one way, you know, and an important way. And so learning tools for emotion regulation is such an important thing for empaths. And I think that that does help us to see it as a gift.
Yeah.
If we can work with our bodies, if we can regulate our nervous system, our emotions, that is a healing thing. And that will actually, you know, help someone to enjoy being an empath, so that it's not that you are, you know, feeling emotionally dysregulated by what's happening inside your body and also what you're picking up from others, but rather, you know that you can regulate your own emotions, and you can also distinguish between your emotions and someone else's and have the boundaries in place that help you from being depleted,
right.
You know, because at the end of the day, stress is a demand on our energy. And if it's constantly getting depleted, whether it's because of our nervous system being so dysregulated that we're sort of in overdrive all the time, you know, we're not meant to have a chronic stress response.
Right.
It's supposed to be a short-lived thing that helps us adapt. And so, absolutely, being able to regulate our emotions, that will help us to enjoy being an empath for sure.
And I love how you said that using the body is one way. And I just, I would love to just have a, you know, send a reminder right now to the listeners that we are all different, and what each one of us needs is going to be our own unique recipe because of how unique and different all of us are. So what works for one may not work for you. And that's why I talk so much about self-awareness and coming back to what you need specifically, and having fun and cultivating joy through, you know, trying whatever you're drawn to, you know, cultivate curiosity and kind of let your mind and body kind of, you know, set the path and kind of, you know, have fun with it. So I just wanted to make sure to have that reminder in there that there's not a one size fits all when it comes to trauma. So I wonder, I know that for me, my own, my personal journey, I had to sort out my trauma responses from what many and myself would call it picking up on others' energy. So I have the ability, of course, to pick up on others' energy and feelings, but it wasn't until I actually started to do the work of healing my own trauma did I really see that, oh, okay, this is my stuff and that isn't. And a lot of people will come to me, they're like, I need to know, is this my energy or not? And I'm like, well, actually, when you start to heal and kind of focus on yourself and build that self-awareness, it naturally flushes itself out between what's yours and what's not. So I realized that a good part of what I thought was other people's energy was actually my hypervigilant brain scanning my environment constantly, searching for clues that I wasn't safe. So can you explain to the audience what hypervigilance is and then why it occurs and what changes happen in our brain to actually make our brain respond in a hypervigilant way?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is such a great question that comes up around empaths. Is it like, is it just, you know, some, is it a trauma response, you know, or is it something else? And I think it can be one or the other. It really depends on the situation.
Right.
But as for hypervigilance, it's exactly what you said. You know, it's a state of hyper arousal. So we're scanning the environment for signs of danger. And, you know, it is a trauma response. And, you know, someone who who's hypervigilant can feel unsafe no matter what environment they're in. Right. And so, you know, the reason that that happens, what's happening in our brains is that it's something called neuroception is what happens in our bodies when we are hypervigilant, especially, but everyone has neuroception. So it's basically how our brains and our bodies interpret people or situations, whether they're safe or not. Mm-hmm. And it's happening outside of awareness. So we don't even know, like we might just notice something, you know, we might hear a noise, right? And spring into action before we ever think a thought.
Right.
So our sense organs are picking up information, our nose, our eyes, our skin, our ears, and then it's sending it to our brain. And, you know, later there's a delay and our brain interprets it and then we create a story around that, but that actually happens later. For someone who has trauma, neuroception can be triggered more often, mm-hmm. right? Because trauma changes our body. It changes our brain. We don't trust. We don't feel safe. And so, you know, we can actually have, you know, faulty neuroception where, you know, we actually misread cues and we might, you know, look at someone who is, frowning and we might think they're disappointed with us and we might sort of go down that spiral and this is dangerous and how do I fix this situation?
Right.
When the reality is maybe they were just thinking about something completely unrelated and, you know, and maybe they're not even disappointed. Maybe that's just the face that they're making at that moment. Or maybe someone raises their voice and you're, you know, you sort of, your body reacts immediately because you know, you sort of associate it with your past experiences with maybe an abusive person yeah. who raises their voice. And so, you know, you might be reacting to it and thinking that's their emotion. Maybe they're happy and that's why they raise their voice. Or maybe they're really, you know, extroverted and they have a loud voice or something like that.
Right.
So in those situations, we're really projecting mm-hmm. our own issues onto someone else. And really, you know, I think it's really important to look at, you know, what's the fact versus the story and to kind of question it a little bit and be aware of our own triggers. So we can almost, you know, sort of do that self-awareness process where we recognize like, oh, wait a minute, that's a trigger for me. Loud voices. Maybe I should just like, sort of observe what's happening here, soothe myself, regulate my emotions right. and really, you know, check this, the story that I'm telling myself. So, you know, and this is, you know, very adaptive that our bodies are doing this. Neuroception is natural. And even, you know, for someone who has trauma, who has maybe some more, you know, faulty neuroception,
yeah.
you know, the important thing is to show ourselves some compassion, mm-hmm. right? Steve Porges, who came up with polyphagal theory, he talks a lot about this, where there are no bad responses, only adaptive
right.
ones. And so it's really important to show ourselves self-compassion. But at the same time, to also develop awareness
yeah.
so that we're not projecting our issues and we are reading cues accurately. Because sometimes, like you said, we can't necessarily get the, we can't necessarily check, right?
Right?
We can't say, hey, are you feeling this way in every situation,
right?
Right? So it's important to develop that self-awareness and also to know what's happening in our bodies so that we can work with neuroception rather than sort of feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can say from my own experience that living a good portion of my life in a hypervigilant state is not for the weak. I mean, it was brutal. And I think mm-hmm. when you said, you know, compassion, that really was the shift for me. Mm-hmm. But to get that level of compassion that I needed to kind of give myself space to show up differently or, and to soothe myself or to feel safe even, I had to actually learn about what it is my body's doing and why. Like that's really what helped mm-hmm. me grow in compassion. What's tragic and heartbreaking to me is the trauma itself, right, is usually brutal. And then the coping mechanisms that we develop because of that trauma, they may initially have helped us cope, but I find mm-hmm. that in adulthood that actually hinders us and hurts us, additionally harms us. And then we get shamed by, you know, the people around us because of those coping mechanisms. It just feels like this constant spiral of shame, right? We feel bad that we do it, but then other people don't like that we do it. And so to come mm-hmm. back to that compassion for ourselves and really understand that you're right, it's adaptive. And like our brains and our bodies adapted to keep us safe. And it's heartbreaking that those things that we're doing to keep safe are actually causing additional harm to ourselves and others. It's my journey that was really the tipping point when I could actually look at myself as with compassion.
Yeah. And that's absolutely what can make the difference when it comes to healing, mm-hmm. so that we aren't vigilant and that we can actually see as an empath, you know, what's happening when it comes to emotions, and also just have more compassion, mm-hmm. and be less likely to pick up, to, you know, sort of absorb,
right,
what other people are feeling or misreading cues and all of those things. So it's so important to have that compassion and to develop, like you said, these are survival mechanisms.
Right.
And to remember that that actually helped you survive. Mm-hmm. And how amazing is that?
Right. Right. So when it comes, you think, I would say, I mean, rewiring the brain, but really it's unlearning or learning new ways to feel safe and show up, right? And not going back to that same survival. Do you think there's specific ways or actions that people can take to rewire the brain for peace or safety rather than hypervigilance? Have you found that there's specific things that work for people?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the important thing to remember, that these are skills. A lot of these are skills, mm-hmm. that can be learned. So we can all do these things, you know, starting very small and working with someone if we need to, but we can definitely learn these skills. I'd say the first one is, you know, a lot of trauma healing. We do a lot of what's called sort of building body awareness, you know, and I love, right. that you talk about this, which, you know, the name for that is interoception, which is being aware of what's happening inside of our body, you know, because when you have trauma, you're often disconnected from your body for a long time, again, as a survival.
Absolutely.
Mechanism. And so it's important to slowly develop that body awareness over time so that you can catch yourself when you're feeling dysregulated,
right.
early, and then use those coping skills, you know, whatever coping skills work for you earlier, before you're to the point of either being overwhelmed or shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to think about it as, you know, what Dr. Dan Siegel, he's a neuroscientist who coined the term the window of tolerance,
yeah.
which I love, which is this idea that, you know, there's a window within which we can tolerate,
mm-hmm.
something without going into a stress response where we are overwhelmed or shut down.
Right.
And we all have this window, and, you know, different things can affect how wide or narrow that window is. And trauma can narrow that window. Lack of self-care as an empath can narrow that window.
Mm-hmm.
So when we use coping skills, we're slowly learning to widen that window of how much we can tolerate without becoming dysregulated,
right.
without going into stress response.
Yeah.
So it can be, you know, different things work for different people. I really enjoy certain techniques, you know, mindfulness techniques,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I love long exhale breathing.
Yeah.
Engages the parasympathetic nervous system, which helps us feel calmer.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just breathing it out longer than in. I love, you know, naming your emotions. That's an important thing that can definitely help us regulate. Grounding is really helpful,
right.
I think, for empaths,
yes.
where we're naming the things we see, we're getting present, we are feeling things in our environment, just getting back into our senses.
Right.
You know, I love those kind of skills. So there are definitely skills that can help us expand our window of tolerance for different things.
Yeah.
And that is a healing thing. You know, of course, there is trauma healing work that involves processing traumatic,
sure.
memories. And so there are different ways to do that. You know, there's EMDR, there's somatic experiencing, there's internal family systems, or IFS, which is what I do. So with IFS, for example, with what I do, we work with parts of us. So I might work in that situation with a part of someone who is hypervigilant,
mm-hmm.
and then ask them, that part, for permission to work with a younger part that it's protecting that feels unsafe.
Mm.
And so we're really working with traumatic memories and those parts and where those parts live in our bodies, because they do, you
yeah.
know, live somewhere in our bodies. And so there are different ways to process traumatic memories and also just to learn skills. And I think all of these things can definitely help us rewire for peace so that we're not vigilant,
yeah.
so that we are able to, you know, to really experience that.
Yeah.
That kind of piece. And I, she's an empath.
Yeah. And I do love that there just are so many different modalities and, you really can have fun with it. So I always say that I have a lifestyle of healing. Like it's just part of how I live my life. But I will say that EMDR was huge for me. And still, like when I did that, it was like a leap of faith. I decided to do it because I was curious. And grounding, I still ground on a regular basis. And journaling was also really big for me. So I would, anytime that something comes up, maybe after meditation or right when I wake up, I journal about it. I process the stories, right? Like you had mentioned before, like start to question the stories. And so when I was really, years ago, when the stories were still very prevalent and would show up daily, instead of, I started to learn that, oh, I don't have to act on those stories. I can actually process them and write through them. And then, and the truth would slowly kind of percolate, through my writing. So that was really powerful for me. And breath, that's something I still do every single day. Meditation was great for me. Especially if your mind's just going all the time. So I really believe that meditation helped me expand that my window of tolerance. I learned to be the watcher of my thoughts instead of the reactor. So that's something that I still do. Because of course we don't get ever, I don't have total control over my mind. So I still do that as a practice. And cold therapy I found, has helped to learn how to soothe myself when I'm first triggered before I go into full activation. I've learned through cold therapy, through breath and mind that I can actually calm my body's, you know, reactions. So I just say again, have fun with it. There's so many different modalities out there. And I follow whatever speaks to me, whatever I'm curious about, I'll go and try it. So I have one last question for you. And it's based on a quote on your website. When I read it, I was like, wow, I have to ask her about this. So the quote is, "What I've learned after almost 20 years of helping people with their emotions and life goals is that prioritizing your emotional health over goals is the kindest and often the fastest route to manifesting them." So I have experienced this truth firsthand because just like 7 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to convince me that that was true. That if I prioritized my emotional well-being over my goals, that I'd actually achieve what I wanted. So unfortunately, we live in a society that glorifies exhaustion and overwhelm and, you know, push yourself to succeed. And the universe actually forced my hand to prioritize emotional health over goals because I didn't have any more energy to put towards goals because I had been working most of my life to prove my worthiness. I went down kicking and screaming. Like it wasn't like an easy thing. So have you found ways that have assisted others in shifting peacefully into prioritizing emotional health over goals?
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually teach what I call trauma-informed manifesting. So hustle, which, you know, is a lot of like action,
yeah,
can be a trauma's response. So, you know, where we have hyper arousal and we're trying to prove our worth. And so my approach is very trauma-informed. So it's not about positive thinking, which can be hard for trauma survivors or anyone who has depression or anxiety.
Absolutely.
But it's more about healing. Yeah. So I help people evaluate how effective their manifestation is, not by how fast it is, but how emotionally regulated or dysregulated they feel during the process. And also how satisfied they feel with what they manifest, right? Because the truth is, a lot of us can become emotionally dysregulated with the manifestation process, especially when what I see is when it takes long, right? Where our expectation is that it's supposed to work faster and there's something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and even if we do manifest a thing that we really, really want, you know, often there's a short-lived mood boost, but we don't actually feel better. So, you know, often chasing a goal can be about an unmet need, actually. So if we work with the part of us that has that unmet need, we reparent, what happens is they often, you know, either choose a different goal that's actually a better goal, or they might not want that goal anymore. And so, you know, we stop pushing when that happens. And often that's where I see the big manifestation breakthroughs happen. Like it's just, it's almost like overnight. Once you get to that sort of point where you are identifying, you know, whether it's like an inner child, maybe you really want something, and we work with that inner child and heal, you know, heal that, or provide that need actually, it might actually not be such a dysregulating thing for us anymore. And so we do have more peace with it. Or if we're working with a part of us that is preventing a goal from manifesting because it sees it as a threat, then, you know, we work with that part and that's no longer an issue. So I really approach it with like an emotion regulation skills and reparenting inner child and, you know, also modifying spiritual manifestation teachings such as the law of attraction, so that they are more sensitive to mental health and to trauma. And so it is a lot more like, you know, if we work on emotional health, a lot of those other things do get worked out, especially if you have specific techniques for them.
Right. I'm just so fascinating. Like I believed honestly in the past that my emotional health would come once I accomplished my goals. Like I, years and years ago, I had an organic clothing company and I still remember this day. It's like an example my husband uses all the time, not all the time, but to reference how things used to be is, my clothing line was carried in this mall in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's called the Scottsdale Fashion Square. It's like the big mall that has all the, you know, really nice, you know, higher end stores. And we went to the mall, because I wanted to see, the display of the baby clothing line. And it was in the front. It was beautiful. I mean, it was just amazing. And I remember walking out of there and my husband said, "Why aren't you happy?" And I was like, "I don't know." But back then, it's like I started the business and I had all these goals. And I, every time I would reach the goal, I never felt satisfied. I mean, now that I look back, I know why, but it's like when I read that quote on your website, I'm like, that's where I spent the majority of my life was chasing emotional health through accomplishments, but I never arrived there. But each time I didn't arrive there, I didn't take that as, you know, proof that this was going to be a chase that I was never going, I was never going to get to the finish line in terms of what I was trying to accomplish. But each time I experienced that, like let down, I kept going. I thought, well, next time, you know, next time. So
yeah, absolutely. If we feel emotionally dysregulated the entire journey, it's not, we're teaching our, you know, we're not teaching ourselves to be regulated. So it's not going to magically happen overnight when we accomplish the goal.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. I love that work. Well, I can't believe it, but we are at the end of today's show. I could speak to you, Dr. Kress, for hours. Thank you so much for being here today. I do want to give you the next couple minutes. I want you to share with my audience what is going on with you, what programs you have coming up, where can they find you if they would want to work with you? So you have the floor, Dr. Kress.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. This is so wonderful. And yeah, I'm excited to share that I actually have a course coming up in October called Healing from Negative Manifestation Experiences. And it's really for people who have, you know, learned about positive thinking, for example, and feel, you know, scared of their negative thoughts and because they're afraid of them manifesting, or maybe they have depression symptoms because they're frustrated with how long they've waited for something to manifest. Or they have trauma and it's actually exacerbating the trauma symptoms. So it's for people who really want to heal from those negative experiences so that they could enjoy the positive aspects of manifesting. And I'll also have other courses also about trauma-informed manifesting. And they can find me on my website, which is drannakress.com. That's drannakress.com. And I'm also on Instagram at drannakress.com.
Fantastic. You guys check her out. The course sounds amazing. Thank you so much again. Thank you for tuning in. And I will talk to you all next week.
Thanks for listening to the Realized Empath Podcast. Revisit past episodes or contact Kristen at realizedempath.com. Did you love this episode? Please share it with a friend. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, sensitive souls.